This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Greetings and welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. Today we are joined by Alan Holt, a 23-year Carlisle veteran and co-head of our flagship U.S. buyout team. Welcome, Alan.
Nice to be here, Chris.
Alan, this is the last in our Geo Perspective series, which has examined the investment climate in key regions of the world. So we're really eager to hear about your views on the U.S. investment market. So let's get right into it. Tell us about the greatest opportunities and challenges that you see in doing buyouts in the United States.
We are currently in U.S. buyout on our sixth buyout fund. And today our current fund is about $13 billion. We are almost 2 years into investing this fund. We have the benefit of investing in the largest economy in the world. And in my opinion, as of right now, U.S. is the best place in the world to invest. It has the most stable economy, although it is clearly an economy that is growing slowly, and there are many other factors such as the strength of the dollar and the price of oil, which is having its ramifications on the results of many companies in the economy. But overall, the businesses are doing quite well, and we think the opportunities are very good. In addition, the U.S., I believe, has the greatest supply of excellent management talent to recruit for the CEO and other top positions, or as operating executives to support our investments in creating value. So I would say strong economy, stable economy, great supply of executive talent, both in the company and also in support of our investments, would be more, as I would put it, on the opportunity side. Moving over to the greatest challenge, there is too much capital chasing too few investment opportunities, resulting in strong competition and, more importantly, inflated values. So you add the factors of lots of dry powder in private equity funds here in the U.S., but also all around the world. In the U.S., very, very strong public equity markets pushing companies to all-time highs, and a robust debt market, and interest rates are at historic all-time lows.
So in your 23-year career at Carlisle, you've seen ups, you've seen downs, you've seen robust periods where you're deploying billions of capital in short periods of time and in a more fallow time. Does a period like we're in now concern you, or is it just part of the way things work and then you just have to be more creative, or what?
The industry has always been a very competitive industry. One must always continually be out there looking for transactions that others might not find. In today's world, most everything results in some sort of competitive process, whether it be an auction up front or in some take privates, you agree to a transaction and then there's a go shop afterwards. So there's always some bit of competition, and it comes in many forms, but rest assured there's always competition. The values today are clearly at about as high as we've ever seen, but look at it from the other side. The interest rates are clearly as low as we've ever seen, and since we are an investor who uses a lot of leverage, that has a tendency to drive valuations up. You also have competition from corporate buyers or non-private equity buyers who, either have a significant amount of available cash on their balance sheet, or if they have to borrow, they too have the benefit of borrowing at extraordinary low interest rates. And then lastly, if they're acquiring and using their stock as currency, well, with the public equity markets as strong as they are today, they clearly have inflated stock currency, which they can also use in acquisitions.
So it sounds like discipline is a key phenomenon here, because on one hand, you have a lot of cash to deploy. You've got a lot of competition out there, high prices, debt is inexpensive. How do you stay disciplined and not feel the urge to push money out there? Is it because you're early, relatively speaking, in the life cycle of your fund?
No, we stay disciplined because we are disciplined, and that has been our hallmark for the 23 years I've been here. We consider ourselves conservative, disciplined investors, and we've invested every fund that we raised, and we believe we did it in a prudent and, more importantly, to very successful results. But you are absolutely correct. In this market, one must maintain an extra degree of discipline, and it just makes the decisions very, very tough. And no doubt about it, though, in this kind of market, you find yourself, in some cases, thinking you're stretching a little, but stretching in a what I call a disciplined way.
Alan, how would you characterize kind of the role that private capital plays in today's market, especially when you have so many strategics out there who are willing to invest and engage in M&A?
Private equity has grown significantly over the last 20 years to become an integral and important part of the M&A and investment markets. More and more investors are allocating an ever-increasing percentage of their portfolio to private equity. Specifically, public and private pension plans and endowments are raising their allocation to private equity. This is on a global basis, not just the United States. That private equity assets under management have grown 20% CAGR since 1980, and today stands at $3.5 trillion of global private equity under management. With $3.5 trillion, private equity is an integral part of the financial economy. I saw in my early days of private equity, you know, some companies may not even want to talk to private equity. And today, we have become such a large force and such a large component of the market that they realize that this is a source of capital that one cannot ignore. Likewise, I think the private equity industry has represented itself quite well over the last 20 years in building the industry and in becoming much more credible than in the early days of leverage buyouts. Over the last 10 to 15 years, we are clearly viewed as a source of capital, but one who looks to continually create value in their companies, and that it's no longer all about financial engineering, which is what private equity got accused of 20 or so years ago. We don't make our returns today just from levering up a business and paying down debt. 20, 30 years ago, when you're paying 5 and 6 times earnings multiple, yeah, maybe then. But today, when you're paying significant prices for these businesses, you must go in there and have an approach as to how you're going to create value.
Now, your fund has made a specialty in doing carve-outs where it's very focused on value creation. Can you talk a little bit about that and kind of the role that you've been able to play?
Many companies today, particularly the larger companies, have lots of different divisions and different lines of business, some which they may have acquired as a result of other acquisitions. And in the world today of lots of pressure from shareholders, you see companies starting to look at their portfolio of businesses and to start deciding what's truly strategic to them and what's not. We have, over the years, tried to focus in on these divestitures where we can buy some of these businesses, but also to see where we can create value. We find some common traits on these carve-outs. They don't get the resources to invest. So in some cases, they become very stale, not growing as much as they should be growing. And people within the company are not as much paying attention to them. They may only, in some cases, use them for cash generation and then just take the cash that the company generates. And what we find is if you go into some of these businesses and you give the existing management teams a plan or work with them on a plan where now they are the most important because it's there in our company right now. It is amazing how much better they perform. Now, many times in those cases, we do go out and we bring in a change agent, someone who's not been in that business and doesn't have any preconceived notions, and we look for those types of businesses and those types of carve-outs. However, with that said, it is not for everyone. They're hard. They're very, very hard to do. When you are carving a business out of a much larger business, in most cases, they don't come out very neatly. They have lots of assets that are combined, whether it be facilities, IT systems, people who support their business, but also support other divisions of this company. So when we do this, we recognize that there is a long and hard transition in order to stand this business up as a completely independent business.
Can you give us an example of how the U.S. buyout team has created value in a portfolio company?
We have numerous examples. One was Philosophy, a developer of and manufacturer and marketer of prestige skincare, fragrance, bath and body, and cosmetic products. Mm-hmm. We acquired it in 2007, and we had a significant amount of work to do. We upgraded the management team by bringing in people with in-depth industry and functional experience. We brought in a new CEO, a chief creative officer, an executive in charge of supply chain, and an executive in charge of sales. We expanded and improved the distribution channels. We targeted the retail expansion strategy, increased it by 3.5 times. And more than doubled brand awareness during our ownership period. We upgraded the online direct sales, and they increased by over 160% during our ownership. And we implemented a new ERP system and logistics center, which expanded our capacity by 2 times and lowered the cost and improved service levels. So that was one example. Another one was a healthcare business, MultiPlan, which is the largest independent preferred provider organization in the United States. We acquired that in 2006 for $1 billion. What we did internally there is we continued to expand the network of healthcare providers in that business. But I'd say that the biggest value creation came from synergistic acquisitions. We made 2 large acquisitions where we created internal cost synergies and revenue synergies. In some of our carve-outs today, we have one right now, the Exalta, which is the DuPont Performance Coatings business. We have a long, long way to go, but so far in that business, we have probably increased earnings by $300 to $400 million. We've paid down a good chunk of debt, but we also got the benefit of these strong equity markets. That was also a very good example of a One Carlyle deal, as U.S. buyout and Europe buyout did that deal together because probably 50% to 60% of the business is resident in Europe. So it was a great example of a carve-out and a great example of One Carlyle.
And One Carlyle is when you've got colleagues working together to try to harness or leverage their either geographic expertise or sector expertise. Is that right?
It is. And the way we look at it in the U.S. fund is that we are looking to be able to marry our industry expertise with local presence, where we can have some of our partners from other sister funds being the feet on the ground, being closer to the operations of the business. And that has allowed us to make very successful investments in partnership with our Europe fund, our South America fund, and our Asia fund. And the fund heads truly believe that their investment staff is not only what they have in their country, but it's the investment staff all over the world and the value that that creates, not only in sourcing deals, but in diligencing those deals and then creating value post-close.
Alan, thank you so much for sharing your views on the U.S. investment climate and what Carlyle is doing from an investment perspective. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on Carlyle ValueCast.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlyle.com. This has been a Carlyle ValueCast podcast.